Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to AI Named This Show. I'm not Tasia Custodi. I'm actually Tristan Jutra.
I'm Tristan Jutra. Shoot! I mean, I'm Tasia Custodi.
And we're your human hosts. On this week's episode, we have some little news from Apple, some big news from Google, and some huge news from OpenAI.
And we're sending a very big and formal Grüezi. To our listeners in Switzerland. Tristan, just so you know, I looked it up, and that is the polite, formal way to greet people we don't know yet. Because in our mind, even though they're our friends, we've not met them yet.
Well, you're much braver than I am with the pronunciation. Well done.
Grüezi. I don't know. In my mind, I nailed it.
I mean, should we trust people that speak so many languages, though?
I'm a linguist. I'm not sure if you've heard. I've
but
probably made
because
some ears burn over the last, what are we at, episode 26?
25.
Oh, 25.
Yeah, two bits. We're a quarter century old.
Look
well
at
done.
Us go.
Our prefrontal cortexes are fully developed.
Ish.
Ish.
All right, Tristan, I have a little bit of follow-up for you because, oh goodness, quite a while back, I feel like it was the end of 2023, I almost said 2022, almost the end of 2023, we talked about how Sarah Silverman and a few other people were suing OpenAI and Meta. Do you remember this? They were suing them over copyright infringement.
And we said, good luck with that.
Correct. And we have a little wee update. So she had sued back in July of 2023, claiming that OpenAI and Meta trained their AI models on her books and other works, obviously without her permission. So what's happening here is basically the judge has struck down a lot of things except for the unfair competition portion. That part of the lawsuit is going to proceed. So U.S. District Judge, here we go. Araceli Martinez Olguin. I'm a linguist. You're going to give me all the hard names today. This wonderful judge, anyhow, sorry, judge, threw out some portions of the complaint from Sarah Silverman's legal team this week, including the negligence, the unjust enrichment, DMCA violations, and accusations.
And that's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act for those playing at home.
Yes, and accusations of voracious infringement.
No, vicarious.
Ah, vicarious. Guys.
It could be voracious as well. I mean, the AI, the large language models are voracious in their appetites.
I can read. So the case's principal claim remains intact. And it alleges that OpenAI directly infringed on copyrighted material by training their LLMs on millions of books without permission. So that part remains intact. Now, as an aside, something that's going to be important here is we've talked about this before a little bit, but like, the U.S. court system as a whole really has not determined whether training AI large language models on copyrighted work falls under that fair use doctrine. So that is still kind of a grayish, undetermined area. Now, last month, you might remember, TJ, that OpenAI admitted in a court filing that it would be, quote, impossible to train today's leading AI models without using copyrighted materials. I don't know why they would have said that in court. Maybe you didn't have to admit that, but anywho, they did. So it's also worth noting that Sarah Silverman's case against Meta was also reduced down to just the copyright infringement claim. So that happened a little while ago. And in that session, U.S. Judge Vince Jabri, goodness gracious, with these names. There's two H's in there. That U.S. District Judge described some of the plaintiffs' dismissed claims as, quote, nonsensical. So, Judge did not mince any words there. Now, the New York Times, just as a reminder for everyone, is also suing OpenAI, as well as a whole collection of nonfiction authors that make up the group The Authors Guild. So there's a lot of different lawsuits going on, a lot of different moving parts. So this is just a couple of the little updates there for you that basically everything else has been pushed aside and the copyrighted material claim is the part that can move forward.
Just a couple of quick things. One, I think maybe that OpenAI mentioned that it would be impossible to train today's leading AI models without using copyrighted materials, because it's basically saying, look, this is how these tools work. This is how this industry works. And the one remaining thing to really determine is whether or not this falls under fair use, because the jury is still out. However, what I would tell Sarah Silverman's legal team is you might want to have a look at the Google Books lawsuit that happened a long time ago, about 9 years ago now. And it was the Authors Guild versus Google, when Google was scanning all sorts of books, millions of books, in an automated fashion to index the content so people could quite easily find things. Now, it was found that it was not really a threat to the book publishers themselves, because they were not duplicating the books. Little snippets were available to show you the context of what it is you were searching for, but it was not intended to replace said books. Kind of like training these large language models is not intended to replace the source materials. So I think they've got a large hill to climb with this case with Sarah Silverman et al., because of a similar thing here is has been shown that to be fair use. It took, like I said, 8 years to work its way through the courts. And at the time, like, Google actually paused their book scanning project. I'm not sure if they've resumed it since. So, you know, that whole point is, like, this, none of this would work without being able to scan these copyrighted materials. Just like reading books wouldn't work with your eyes unless you were reading copyrighted materials, and you wouldn't be able to write book reviews without doing copyrighted materials. Like,
that's
kind of how learning and training works, right?
Is how these models are trained. They're not outputting direct plagiarism from the book.
Unless people are trying to game the
correct
the with that whole New York Times thing a few weeks ago when they were.
Well, they were prompting it to.
Yeah, in a very deliberate
and
unusual way. So, all right, good luck with that. Continued.
We file this one under good luck with that.
All right, next up. Again, every little check-in with Apple. They've been quietly working away at their AI efforts, in addition to the hardware stuff we've mentioned before on the chip side of things. Apple has made an AI image tool called MGIE, or Maggie. And MGIE stands for MLLM Guided Image Editing Model.
Now, what's MLLM?
MLLM is Multimodal Large Language Model. So this is and what's happening, a lot of what Apple's doing is in conjunction with universities and research. A lot of this is behind the scenes kind of open source stuff. It's like, go and play with it. But they're not going to call their product this, obviously. This is stuff, these are technologies that they will eventually be weaving in to their own product. So they're just leaning into the weird names here, but they're never going to see names like this in their actual products. So it's a new AI image editing tool developed by Apple with the University of California, Santa Barbara, also known as UCSB, and that can modify photos based on text prompts. So we've seen creating imagery using text prompts, but this is taking existing photos and images and modifying them. Because often when we try to use text prompts to modify things that we create with text prompts, sometimes it totally loses the plot. It doesn't even remember what the original thing was, and it's giving you something totally different. Again, it's like, hey, wait, don't just do the thing like you did just a second ago, but make it better. Nope, we're going to do something brand new again. It's like, gah! So the idea here is you're taking something, an existing image, and just chatting away with the LLM, the MLLM, to get it to do what you want. So the idea is it can perform simple and complex tasks such as cropping, resizing, flipping, adding filters, changing colors, shapes, and brightness of objects in photos. Can you think of any particular... So typing, you know, is one thing. But imagine if you could just say these commands and just... Can you think of a device recently announced by Apple that it might be handy to be able to have enhanced voice interactions to be able to manipulate media?
Something... Let me check the vision of the future. I wonder... tip of the tongue.
Yeah, nothing's coming to mind. Anyhow, so this model, the Maggie, M-G-I-E, is available for download on GitHub and has a web demo on Hugging Face Spaces, which is another place where all sorts of fun open source stuff exists. And as you might have noticed, Apple has been very active publicly in the generative AI field, but has released some open source frameworks and plans to add more AI features to its devices as time goes on. So watch this space, because a lot of this stuff, if they can finally make Siri smarter, it's not only going to benefit your iPhones, your iPads, your Macs, but also maybe something like the Apple Vision Pro, where the interaction model is a whole little different mode, multimodal, so to speak.
She's really been the most lackluster part of an Apple user's
Well, they all
experience.
Feel so dumb now, especially that we've had a chance to talk to these fancy new LLMs, right? So last week, we had some amazing news from Google, Gemini, and there's some more news this week, but just a quick little bit of update first. For those who have been playing around with the various versions of Google's Gemini AI, is that there are some potential privacy considerations for you to bear in mind. That this AI assistant retains user data for up to 3 years and uses human reviewers to improve its performance. So with that in mind, maybe don't provide just like you with any other of these things, maybe don't provide any confidential information or data that you wouldn't want a reviewer to see or Google to use. The other thing to bear in mind is that if issued a warrant, data could be accessed by law enforcement or used as evidence in court cases.
So don't make a plan to bury the body and where you're going to bury the body. Because just as we've seen when people do that with Google Maps, the same applies here. You're going to be dumb in your own mind.
Dear Google Gemini, what's the best way to kill my podcast co-host without getting caught? And how should I dispose of the body? That's in your search history. I saw it. Google Gemini told me. He's keeping it for 3 years.
I don't know what you're talking about. It hallucinated both the prompt and the response.
As mentioned, there's more to the Google Gemini story this week, Tasia, and that's where you shine.
There is more, and I want you to hold on to your hats because, we love Google and the naming conventions, so just let's not get confused, folks. I have to preface this story by saying... Today, Tristan, this morning, I released a new YouTube video about Gemini Advanced. And I kid you not, the second I went on Twitter or X, because I was going to put that tweet out that I used Gemini Advanced to promote it with, don't I frickin' see a tweet from Google being like, hey, 1.5 Pro is here. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I just released this video. I cannot keep up. What the heck is 1.5 Pro? So let me break it down for you. We talked last week about the naming convention. So Gemini Advanced uses Ultra, okay? And right now that's Ultra 1.0, okay? Or 1.0 Ultra, whatever you want to call it. The regular free Gemini version uses Pro. The Pro is what is powering it. So this was like a Pro 1.0, I guess. Well, now the regular free Gemini version is getting 1.5 Pro. And Google is saying this achieves comparable quality to 1.0 Ultra, which, remember, is the one that powers the paid Gemini Advanced. So not only are they saying it achieves comparable quality, but while using less compute. So this new generation, they say, also delivers a breakthrough in long context understanding. So they've been able to significantly increase the amount of information that their models can process, running up to 1 million tokens consistently, achieving the longest context window of any large-scale foundational model yet. So this is pretty big, because this kind of, this longer context window kind of shows us what's going to be possible. So they're going to enable entirely new capabilities and help developers build more useful models and applications. Now, this is in limited preview right now. It's an experimental feature. This is what Google likes to do. They like to say, this is an experiment. And then they're really, really, as we know, cautious as you can be with this type of stuff. So right now, it's just going to be for developers and some enterprise customers to kind of test it out and provide some feedback. It's a mid-size multimodal model optimized for scaling across a wide range of tasks. And like I said, it performs very similar to the 1.0 Ultra, which is that paid Gemini Advanced, their largest model to date. So Gemini 1.5 Pro comes with a standard 128,000 token context window. But as of when this news broke this morning, that limited group of developers and enterprise customers can try it with that context window of up to 1 million tokens via AI Studio and Vertex AI. And this is just like in a private preview. So as they're rolling out that 1 million token context window, they're also working on optimizations to improve the latency, reduce computational requirements, and then also, of course, just enhance overall user experience. So hopefully you understand the naming conventions and what's going on, but this is big because since this is an upgrade to what I'm just going to say for all us lay people, the free version of Gemini, essentially.
It's getting a big upgrade. Yeah.
Yeah, what most people are using. And if you don't want to pay, if you're a freemium user, you don't want to pay for a Gemini Advanced. Because by the way, at least as of right now, in certain countries where image generation is available, image generation is also available on Gemini, the free basic version of Gemini. So if that's a reason people are thinking to upgrade, at least as of right now, you don't need to unless they pull that and make that only for paid users. So it's kind of really interesting to see, like, well, wait a second, hang on a tick. You just announced Advanced and we got an app and we got Gemini in our Google app on iOS. And wait, now you're saying this free version is powered by 1.5 Pro, which this Pro is going to be better than Ultra. So what's going to be next week, Tristan? Ultra 1.5
max extreme
ultra to the max.
So there's
keep up
there's well, which I mean, it's cool. Pro's gonna get smarter when this eventually goes public, and it could be weeks or it could be months away for all we know. But then just imagine what Ultra is going to be like. The 1.5 version of Ultra is going to be massive,
crazy.
Now, just a couple of things. The first is that, in case anyone and any of you out there is wondering, like, what is a context window again? Quick refresher, a context window in an LLM or large language model is like its short-term memory, allowing it to consider a certain amount of recent information, much like how each of us can only keep a few sentences in mind while having a conversation, as evidenced by what's happening right here.
Now, I can't even keep anything in mind.
It's like, how many quote-unquote tokens can you keep in your mind? And so a token is a unit of text that the model reads, processes, or generates. And this is a little bit of a mushy concept, because it could be as small as a single character, or it could be as long as a word, or even an entire phrase. So let's say we took a sentence like, Tasia loves Google! Exclamation
Fact.
Point. Yeah. Each word and each punctuation mark, so Tasia loves Google! Exclamation point, could be considered separate tokens, again, depending on the context. So for context on how these numbers we're talking about here compare to what we've been seen in the past from other LLMs, we're talking about 128,000 tokens up to 1 million now. Well, believe it or not, GPT-3, so that's just a year and a couple of months ago, like 15 months ago, 4,096 tokens. GPT 3.5 Turbo, 16,000 tokens. GPT-4, big jump, 128,000 tokens. And the current Gemini Pro is at 32,000 tokens. And Sundar Pichai from Google is even talking about models with 10 million tokens in the future.
Good.
So you can see where the curve that this stuff is developing on, right? And why people with concerns about the future of AI and safety and all this stuff and the power to create media, deep fakes, etc., is really on people's minds because the context windows, the power, the access to computing resources just increasing. And some of the other stories we're going to be talking about today kind of tie into this. But before we let this story go, let's just talk very briefly about Google and their marketing. There is this a middle management battle? What is happening that only a week after this wonderful launch of Gemini do we have Gem 1.0? Do we have, oh, we're already talking about Gemini 1.5. Now, students of tech history may be familiar with something called the Osborne effect. And very roughly, it was in the 80s, one of the early luggable computers, kind of like a K-Pro. It's like a suitcase computer, launched with great fanfare, the Osborne 1. But it wasn't much long after they announced the Osborne 1 that they already started talking about the Osborne 2, which was coming out next year. Well, what do you think that did to the sales of the Osborne 1? I don't think we ever saw an Osborne 3. Let's just put it that way. So not quite the same danger here, because we're talking about, you know, online, you know, services and, you know, software in the cloud and whatnot. But what it does do is confuses people. And, you know, with Google and its naming, and now this, and sure, this is private testing, but couldn't you have just given it a little longer? But it just goes to show you how fast things are moving in AI that these companies don't want to wait because, you know, the competitors are not sitting
each
still.
One just keeps eclipsing. They keep leapfrogging each other. Exactly. And it's like, what will tomorrow bring? We just don't know.
Well, we know a little bit. In that NVIDIA, who has been working hard on their cranking out specialized hardware for all of these AI companies with their, I don't even remember the names. There's all sorts of model names. You can look them up. But they're selling these by the truckload. They're being bought up by, by Tesla, being bought up by OpenAI, being bought up by XAI, sort of affiliated with Tesla via Elon Musk. All these folks are buying tons of...
Right place, right time.
Exactly. So it's not just about gaming. It's not just about crypto. Now it's about AI as well. Now, NVIDIA is like, hey, you know, there are so many PCs out there that just regular PCs and gaming PCs that have our graphics cards in them. And sure, they're not specialized for AI, like some of the other high-end things that we're selling for tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars a pop. Well, some of these can be pretty good for doing a little bit of AI on your home computer. So NVIDIA has launched a free demo version of a personalized chatbot called Chat with RTX. Just rolls off the tongue. It runs locally on Windows PCs with NVIDIA's GeForce RTX 30 series GPUs or higher with at least 8 gigabytes of RAM. That's 8 gigabytes of RAM, I believe, on the graphics card itself. That's not talking about your computer's RAM. The chatbot can access your documents and answer questions based on them. And so it supports several file formats, including TXT files, PDFs, docx files from Word, XML, and so on. And NVIDIA says it will load the relevant files into its data set in seconds. And this is all happening locally. So the company claims it's fast, private, and secure. There's also some online capabilities, including the ability to paste in a YouTube URL and have it check out the script and kind of like we were talking, we've been talking on previous episodes, look things up in transcripts and whatnot. So it can interact with YouTube videos directly from its chat with RTX interface. And reviewers at The Verge praise the chatbot's ability to analyze a collection of documents and provide contextual answers. So we can see here where we're going with some of these digital assistants. It's a little bit of the future. Using our personal data, it's kind of like people on a Mac, we use Spotlight to search things. It can be reasonably good at finding documents, not only based on the title of the document, but also the contents. You know, those deep searches. Windows has similar features. I remember Google had something a long time ago. Was it called Google Desktop Search? Wasn't that like 15 years ago? Mm-hmm. That was an app that you would download, and it was using the power of Google search engine on your desktop. So this is like the kind of like the spiritual successor.
We're linguists I'm not drunk, here, I promise. Remember? It's fine.
I'm just drunk on AI. So think of it as a spiritual successor to something like Google Desktop Search or Spotlight. Of course, it's the early days, so there's still going to be some bugs, but it's kind of interesting. Now it's coming home, like onto your device. So the next logical extension of that, of course, is getting it on your tablets and smartphones, et cetera, being able to scour and interact with anything that you've already got on your device. And that, in the future, that could even be things like photos. And we've seen little glimpses of this, say with the Photos app on your iPhone, where you can just type in the word dog, and for the last couple of years, it'll show you pictures of dogs that you've taken. And, you know, cat, same, or even types of dogs, like collie. Type in collie, and it shows me pictures of my dog. So, and, you know, with face recognition, all that sort of stuff. So here we're talking about text, but of course, this thing is only going to grow and grow as these graphics cards get more powerful and the optimized chipsets on all our devices, be it our desktop and laptop computers, tablets, and smartphones, because we've got Google working with their Tensor chips, you know, Apple with their neural engines on their A and M series processors. So, all this stuff is going to start getting even more and more useful as time goes on. You excited?
It's all so overwhelming. We need to start pausing in the middle of these podcasts to just take a deep breath.
Take a deep breath.
Oh, boy.
But you know what? NVIDIA isn't quite done yet, Tasia, because they are pursuing $30 billion custom chip opportunity with a new unit. So as mentioned, they have been doing well with their existing lineup so far, but they're not content with just that. They're building a new business unit focused on designing bespoke chips for cloud computing firms and others, including advanced AI processors. So the company aims to capture a portion of an exploding market for custom AI chips and shield itself from the growing number of companies pursuing alternatives to its products. News on that in just a moment. NVIDIA faces competition from Broadcom, from Marvell, as well as its own customers who are developing their own internal chips. They plan to target the cloud, 5G wireless, video games, and automotive markets with its custom chip offerings, and have met with representatives from Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, Google, and OpenAI to discuss making custom chips for them, too. It's also in talks with Ericsson for a wireless chip and Nintendo for a new console chip. So it's not just AI, but AI is definitely part of this conversation. But part of this may be in response to what maybe your nunk's been working on the side.
I've been waiting all show to talk about my nunk. Mm-mm-mm.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Sam Altman back in the news today for multiple reasons.
You know he's not going to like you back.
I know. I'm so sorry. Upset. In my mind, he does.
Okay.
And really, that's all that matters, okay? He would like me as like a friend.
Sure, sure. And you could talk about AI chips and hardware.
I could just pick his brain like, what's it like to be this smart and driven? Also, why are you my nunk? How do you feel? Okay, anyway, let's get serious for a wee tick. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Sam Altman is trying to raise as much as $7 trillion.
With a T. Like, what?
I want to do the Austin Powers.
The Pinky. Dr. Evil?
The Dr. Evil. $7 trillion.
Okay. Just so we're clear, that's $7,000 billion.
It's hard to
go big or go home, right?
Imagine that number, but he's trying to raise as much as this to significantly increase the world supply of semiconductor chips. So he's reportedly been talking to prospective investors, including the United Arab Emirates government, about his proposals to help solve the global chip shortage. Because you do what? You go where the money is. So
some money there.
They do. So the UAE's Sheikh Tanun bin Zayed Al Nahyan. Did I nail it? Why am I getting the names today? Tristan.
Is that three strikes and you're out? I think you're doing great.
You know what? I'll see you later. Goodbye. Anyway, I'm just going to say that he is reportedly one of the potential backers. So it's also reported that Altman is pitching this as kind of like a partnership with OpenAI and the chip makers and investors who can finance GPU chip plants. And then the facilities will be run by established chip makers. So we know that Minung has been very vocal about the need for greater infrastructure to support AI's advancement. So this just seems like the next move, but the number is hilarious. Like, I don't know if you follow him at all on Twitter, but like Mr. Beast has had some back and forth with him and it has been so funny. Like, he's like, if you can just give me like just a little bit of that $7 trillion, I could make videos, like so many videos for the rest of existence, basically. Like, it's just, it's wild to think out. But that is not the only OpenAI news, of course.
We're not done. Not nearly
we're
done.
We're not, we're just, it's tip of the iceberg, peeps. So strap in, sit down. Because we got a long road. No, but in all seriousness, OpenAI has confirmed that state-affiliated bad actors have been using their tech for malicious purposes, which this has been like, we've assumed this was going to happen. So now we're just kind of getting confirmation. So this discovery comes as part of a collaboration with Microsoft Threat Intelligence, which is like a community of like thousands of experts and researchers and threat hunters. I want that job. I don't actually want the job. It's way above my pay grade.
They throw the best parties.
It's like, what do you do? I'm a threat hunter. Just sounds so badass. Anyway, this whole group of people, they analyze and detect cyber threats. Like, that's what they do. So OpenAI says they discovered at least 5 confirmed state-affiliated actors that were using their services for querying open source information, translating, finding coding errors, and then running basic coding tasks. And we have a little short list of these bad actors.
This is my favorite part.
Oh my God. You know we love naming conventions here on this show. This is very exciting.
Google, pay attention.
Pay attention, because this is how you do. Pay attention to these bad actors, because this is how you do a naming convention. So there's 2 China-affiliated actors known as Charcoal Typhoon and Salmon Typhoon. Friggin' so good.
Are they on tour together? Real bangers. Dropping soon.
They've got just some absolute bops. So there's an Iran-affiliated actor known as Crimson Sandstorm. These are starting to sound like porn names. Crimson Sandstorm.
Sure. A redhead, I take it.
And there's a North Korea-affiliated actor known as Emerald Sleet. And a Russian-affiliated actor known as Forest Blizzard. There is a blizzard is that? In that forest.
Pine-flavored blizzard now from Dairy Queen.
Yummy. So the accounts were said to be relying on OpenAI's services to bolster potential cyber attacks. Now, here's what's important. This, I'm going to just quote Microsoft here. They said that these include reconnaissance, such as learning about potential victims' industries, locations, and relationships with helping coding, including improving things like software scripts and malware development, and assistance with learning and using native languages. They also go on to say that language support is a natural feature of LLMs and is attractive for threat actors with continuous focus on social engineering and other techniques relying on false, deceptive communications tailored to their targets, jobs, professional networks, and other relationships. So this is kind of like a, I'm not hitting the panic button, but it's there. I'm aware of it. So they also chalked this up to, you know, they kind of try to dumb it down for us a little bit so we don't hit that panic button. And they're just saying, you know what? This was like an early detection effort intended to expose, quote, early stage incremental moves that we observe well-known threat actors attempting. So there, it's important to say here, they're not saying anything bad actually happened because of this or yet. They're just saying, hey, oopsie, and they're saying they've gotten ahead of it, and they're just saying, you know what, it's under control. We're just merely saying we've figured out that there were these accounts using our tool, and we've deleted them.
Nothing to see here.
That's, in a nutshell, what they're saying. If you buy it, Tristan, that's up to you. But this is...
The transparency is a good sign.
Yes.
And the fact that said actors are using OpenAI's tools, I guess, you know, they could take it as a compliment. It may also tell you that the tools available under those regimes may not be as advanced because of various restrictions placed upon them. So they're using tools from OpenAI and others to do whatever it is they want to do. You know, whether it's their misinformation or disinformation campaigns, their deepfakes or what have you. The other thing that just came to mind that I think would be good for us to be aware of is there have been reports of people who have kind of jailbroken some of these LLMs, so to speak, either on purpose or even accidentally by certain types of prompts. And sometimes it's just this has happened to me every once in a while too, where I've started a prompt and I've kind of aborted it, and then it answers a question that I didn't ask. We've also seen times where it's all of a sudden offered up a whole bunch of gobbledygook, some of which includes other people's information in there. And OpenAI has worked hard to try and stamp some of those bugs out. But if there is research being done by bad actors on how to hack the systems just through the text interface, that might be a concern. And I'm sure that OpenAI's security team is watching for that kind of stuff. So if you ever encounter some unexpected responses when using any of these LLMs, it would behoove all of us legitimate users, non-malicious actors, to report said incidents to the maker of the LLM, be it OpenAI, Google, and so on, NVIDIA, so that they can keep on top of those things, because those are exactly the kind of exploits that bad actors would look for in order to compromise security of the others that they may know are using these systems. You know, Microsoft, right? Copilot, everyone, they're pushing it to enterprise. So don't you think that bad actors around the world, for espionage or other reasons, might not be interested in trying to worm their way into the information that's being shared with Microsoft Copilot? Like, I'm sure there's a way.
Tristan, is still not it for Minunk and OpenAI and ChatGPT, because ChatGPT 5, we've got some news there, don't we?
Well, hold on to your hats. So, of course, it stands to reason that we went from 3 to 3.5 turbo to 4. This talk that 4.5 turbo is sort of, you know, happening behind the scenes. But of course, GPT-5 is going to be a thing at some point. And in a conversation with others, Sam Altman talks to a lot of folks, but one of the things he mentioned in a conversation between him and Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella is that the next version of GPT will have improved speech, images, and video capabilities, as well as better reasoning ability and reliability. So, of course, you know, Google, NVIDIA, not to mention Meta and Apple, they're all pursuing, Meta and Apple, who are pursuing open source angles. We've got Google and NVIDIA and others doing kind of closed source stuff. GPT-5 will be more customizable, more personalized, able to use personal data. Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. NVIDIA. Integrate with external data sources and process multiple content types such as images, audio, video, and numerical data. So we know in the past that ChatGPT hasn't been great at math, so that was going to get better. There's no specific release date yet, but it's expected to be sometime in 2025. But OpenAI may introduce an interim update. Let's call it ChatGPT 4.5 in the meantime. And of course, GPT-5 could lead to GPT-4 becoming more affordable and accessible. So kind of like they did with 3.5 once 4 came out. And enable ChatGPT to handle complex tasks such as coding, translation, and research. Just more and more powerful naturally as time goes on. But wait, there's more.
There's more.
Yeah. So what are the sort of features that we might see specifically in GPT-5? Well, there's a couple being tested already, and we're going to talk about two of them. One aspect of a future version of ChatGPT is likely to be long-term conversation memory. So OpenAI announced that in conjunction with a small pool of users, it is experimenting with adding a form of long-term memory to ChatGPT that will allow it to remember details between conversations. So you'll be able to ask ChatGPT to remember or forget and see what it remembers. Memories will evolve with the interactions and be applied across conversations, and your custom GPTs will have their own distinct memories. So each of your individual custom GPTs that you've made for specific purposes, they'll maintain longer term memories over time as well. So some of the examples cited included, let's say you wanted to set up and run a coffee shop. Well, there's all sorts of different aspects of running a coffee shop. It could, you know, be like operations, you know, HR, accounting, customer service, you know, supply chain, all this kind of stuff. If you could just have your custom GPT in that case, probably, as opposed to the general one, just keep all as much of that stuff in its head as possible going on so that you could go back to it and say, hey, who was the supplier for that yerba mate blend that we like so much, et cetera. And this could, you know, save you time like sifting through documents as just one example. Others included, generating graphics for a toddler. I guess, you know, if you're making coloring books and the like, and, you know, this particular style you're trying to get it to remember as opposed to reinventing the wheel every single time. Designing kindergarten lesson plans. Why not? It might be, especially in the types of curriculum development where a lot of the stuff builds on the past, you want to make sure it maintains a memory of what you've already covered. When it comes to enterprise and teams customers for ChatGPT, you could have your chatbot remember your business's preferences for tone, voice, formatting, programming languages, coding frameworks, all that sort of stuff. Now, of course, any tendency for a tool like this to remember information is going to bring privacy implications with it. So we should be aware that our saved memories are subject to OpenAI training use unless we specifically opt out. And as part of this whole process, OpenAI is also trying to reassure everyone that it's taking steps to mitigate biases and avoid remembering sensitive information. So what is sensitive? Who knows? Again, maybe just don't share sensitive information with your chatbot if you're concerned about that.
Overall theme today, they have long memories.
Exactly.
Their memories are better than ours. They're getting longer and better every day. Let's not share what we don't want to share.
So this, along with that NVIDIA chat with RTX story that we were talking about, is offering another angle to a sneak peek into what AI assistants will become as we continue this journey. But there's even more.
I'm so excited. Okay, no.
Even more. What other kinds of capabilities do you think OpenAI will be developing for its next big version of GPT? So GPT-5, for example, or maybe even sooner. Well, there's enhanced multimodal capabilities, including video. You know, they've already woven in DALL-E into the ChatGPT interface. Well, let's get some video in there too. So with generative video tools like Runway, with Pika and Google Lumiere have been getting lots of attention over the last few months, OpenAI has not been sitting still. They've announced a new text-to-video AI model that can generate realistic and imaginative scenes from text instructions. And it's called Sora. S-O-R-A. And it can generate videos of up to a minute long. So we're not just talking like 5 seconds like with some of these other tools we've been talking about previously. And you can have multiple characters in them, motions, emotions, and physical interactions. It can also modify existing videos or images with text prompts. So that a little bit of what we were talking about with Apple with modifying images. Well, this is modifying video with text prompts. OpenAI has showcased some of the videos on the on their own website. And for those who may be watching at home, we will have we'll throw some of these up here.
Go to openai.com/Sora, S-O-R-A. So it's wild.
One of the examples, and I'll just read you the prompt, because again, with any stuff you're doing with LLMs, the garbage in, garbage out. So the better, more detailed prompt you give it, the better output you're going to get. And this is no exception here. So one example is: a stylish woman walks down a Tokyo street filled with warm, glowing neon and animated city signage. She wears a black leather jacket, a long red dress, and black boots, and carries a black purse. She wears sunglasses and red lipstick. She walks confidently and casually. The street is damp and reflective, creating a mirror effect of the colorful lights. Many pedestrians walk about. And what it's generated, if this is to be believed, is wild.
So they've said on their website, by the way, that this is, they've done nothing to these videos. These are examples of ones that are, this is what the output was on that prompt. So like this particular one that you're talking about, TJ, oh, we can get some of the other ones in a second, but it's a little bit mind-blowing because you have to look really closely to see, oh, there's some glitchiness, or her legs at certain points when they're crossing over, it doesn't really work exactly well. Like, if you watch it close enough and enough times, but on first look, when you're first just looking at this, this could be a woman walking down a street in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. It's friggin' insane. It's insane. And then, guys, they like cut to like this close-up of her. There's a logo on the side of the sunglasses that they put on her. Like
reflections in the sunglasses.
Yes.
Lenses.
They put like, the reflections in the, of the street in the friggin' sunglass lenses. Like the detail of the buttons on the coat. Like, it's freaking me out.
So where it might fall apart is that if a native Japanese speaker and reader, they were to look at the signs, they might go, wait a second, those are gobbledygook characters. So similarly, if this was an English setting, we might read the signs and they might not make any sense. So there will still be some telltale signs, so to speak, right? But again, just the step change in quality from efforts we've seen from others to date is wild. Some of the other prompts are short, some are long, but the most impressive ones are often from the longest detailed prompts. We've got some, you know, giant woolly mammoths and a long prompt description there. A movie trailer featuring the adventures of a 30-year-old spaceman wearing a red wool knitted motorcycle helmet for some reason. Drone views of waves crashing
that
against some
incredible
rugged cliffs along Big Sur's Garay Point Beach.
It's incredible.
It looks like drone footage.
It looks like legit drone footage. Like, if you guys go to openai.com/Sora, I'm telling you, some of this stuff, like, especially those landscape shots where there's not, like, a lot of people movement or pet movement or things like that.
Or signage.
No
words, like, letters.
Like, we're looking at some stuff here where, oh, that's a legitimate B-roll shot. Somebody put a drone up and went there to Big Sur. I mean, it's insane.
So we've seen a variety of styles, including animated scenes, paper crafts, so like artistic type stuff, other, you know, wildlife, photorealistic close-up video of two pirate ships battling each other as they sail inside a cup of coffee.
Wow.
So some of these definitely give AI vibes, but some of them are just like, if there's a casual viewer, it's like, oh, it's a young man in his 20s sitting on a piece of cloud in the sky reading a book. It looks
legitimately cool. Like there's a dude reading a book in a friggin' cloud. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, I showed it to Brett earlier and I was like, dude, if we didn't know that it's not humanly possible to sit on a cloud, it looks like a dude sitting on a cloud reading a book.
So Sora is currently only accessible to a select group of testers and creators who are providing feedback and assessing potential risks and harms.
Gee, I wonder what could go wrong.
And something tells me, Tasia, that you might have some thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts. I need to preface this by saying I'm jazzed, I'm pumped, I'm very excited, my mind is blown, all the coolness, all the things, okay? But we've got to talk a little bit about disinformation for a second, because this, as you could assume, we're going to have some problems, Tristan. We're going to have some problems. So I want to put my excitedness on the back burner just for a second, because if you actually take a look at OpenAI as a company, and you know I love my nunk, you know I think this is just exceptional work. All of OpenAI's public tools are content generators. So the likes of which, as we know, experts have warned, are just primed to be used in fraudulent ways, maybe for disinformation campaigns and the like. So I just want to keep that in mind. Like, when it comes to something like Sora, like this text to video generation, OpenAI does say it's working on some watermarking technologies in order to like flag content that it's been, this generator has been used to create it. So who knows what that'll look like. That's why this is obviously still not, they're not just going to release it to the public yet. They're going to do a lot more testing on it. But they're hopefully creating some systems that aren't going to allow users to generate violent or sexual imagery. They've actually mentioned that a few times so far today already in the release. But like, I just want you to think about this. The entire point of Sora is to generate fake content. Like, think about that. It's to generate content that doesn't exist, right? Like, we're just like, hey, make this up. So what I'm not super pumped about is the fact that this is happening right during election season. So
what's the worst that could happen?
My God, help me. So my hope is like, please keep this in a testing phase. And I know, and we've mentioned, this is not the first text to video generator, we get it. But when you see what these outputs are of what they're claiming are like the first output that it's doing, and this isn't even friggin' publicly available, this is next level. And the concern for me here is we see how quick these things are evolving. I'm telling you, Tristan, please don't put it in the hands of public before this election season. You know what? Not even this whole year. Not even right after the election season. It's not hard to see how some of this generated content can be used for political disinformation, scams, otherwise generally toxic content. So it's great that they're putting some of these guardrails in place, but I think we're going to need a lot more guardrails than just what they're saying in terms of like flagging content that seems to quote violent or sexual. Like, I think we're going to need a little more guardrails in terms of that. There's also what we've talked a lot about before in terms of like environmental impact here. So there's been a lot of research being done into like how much this takes, like how much energy this type of stuff takes. And geez, wasn't it just last episode we talked about just like our text-to-text LLMs and how much that takes? Text-to-image generators are significantly worse, environmentally speaking. So some researchers say like creating an AI image takes the same amount of energy as it does to fully charge your smartphone. Just one image. So now we're talking about text-to-video on like a large scale. And like you're saying, it's up to a minute long video right now. So it's not even these short 5-10 second videos. So we do need to be mindful of that. And in that vein, I just want to bring up with you, I don't know if you, there's a fun thread going on Twitter right now. And as much as I enjoy it, and it has been quite a delight. So Sam Altman has been taking people's requests in his thread after he announced this, and people have been telling him what he wants to prompt, what they want to make. So some people have said things like a half duck, half dragon flies through a beautiful sunset with a hamster dressed in adventure gear on its back. You know, there's futuristic prompts. There's prompts about like There was a penguin, I think, playing chess. There's all this kind of stuff. Listen, super fun. But I do think about the amount of energy it takes. It took just to make that 10-second prompt for the people. You understand? So it's fun. And this has been really great. Like, somebody did one, a bicycle race on ocean with different animals as athletes riding the bicycles with drone camera view. And it's so cute to see a dolphin on a bike in the ocean, I gotta tell you. But do we need it? Is this what we need? So there is that bit of concern. And I will also just leave you with this, Tristan. Is this gonna take my job? I am a video creator. And I'm being a little facetious, a little not. You know, there is a concern in the creator economy for sure with any of this. Like, with the text generators, with image generators, with now video generators. I again would just caution people and say, use it as a tool. So here's what I want to say after all my scary stuff is I look at this and when I put aside all the scary stuff, I don't actually think it's going to take my job because it can't replace a human aspect to the work. But what it can do for video creators, do you know how many times, like daily, I have to go and use terrible B-roll sites? Like, I've got to go to like Shutterstock or Pexels or somewhere and find video B-roll that I can use in client stuff because they're sending me this content and they want to put a profile video together and there's not been an on-location shoot. We have no video of these people and I have to cover them talking on camera with something. This would be huge for me. And I'm sure for a lot of video creators. So the places I'd be concerned are if you're the Shutterstocks, if you're the Pexels, and if you're the creators that sell their content on those sites. Like, you know, your stock B-roll footage. Because I got to tell you, Tristan, I am sick and tired of seeing the same actors in this stock B-roll footage. It's getting really tiring. So now it will be different people all the damn time. Very exciting.
You could have a litter of golden retriever puppies, for example.
Playing in the snow. Guys, there was a little Dalmatian on like a windowsill in Italy. And the little Dalmatian just hops from one windowsill to the other windowsill. And it sticks its tongue out as it does it. And I just, you know, cute as all heck, but do we need it?
So you've raised a number of issues there, and I just want to take a quick sec to jump on a couple of them. One is that about the safety guardrails. One of the things we didn't talk about, and I assume this is going to be part of it, is they will probably be restricting the inclusion of public figures in this, especially politicians, possibly celebrities, maybe even all living people that they're aware of, including certain podcast hosts, but you never know. Maybe we can replace ourselves. The environmental side of things, of course, there's going to be the hit from people just playing around, right?
Yeah.
But then there's also the math that one needs to do regarding what's the amount of energy required to go and do a location shoot, you know, to fly and or drive somewhere with one's drone, to, you know, shoot all this footage, do all the stuff on the computer, render, et cetera, et cetera. Or if one's doing, you know, 3D style animation, there's a large computing component to that too, CPU and especially GPU, and then the rendering there. So before we get too carried away with the environmental impacts of these for professional use, at the very least, we might want to consider the savings in, like, say, carbon footprint or whatever measure that we're using.
Batteries or just straight of up. Your gear.
Yeah. All that thing. But The thing with tools like this is that, you know, quote unquote, it democratizes access to this. So you're going to see a lot more people playing around with it. And that has its own energy footprint, carbon footprint, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see, you know, how that all washes out. But again, most tech of one form or another takes power. And that's, I mean, it's an issue, but usually human flourishing, I think, as we've discussed before, involves higher energy use. And that's why Yurnunk has also been looking at, you know, looking into fusion power and all that. There's lots of research being done on various types of clean power to help us, because all the good things are going to have energy consumption footprint, carbon footprint, et cetera. So whatever we can do to best mitigate those, the better. Because these tools aren't going to go away. You know, they're not saying like, oh no, we're not going to have these tools now because they take too much energy. Nope, sorry, we just have to adapt, right? Mm-hmm. But I can't wait to get my hands on this, and take down our power grid.
Hey, I mean, this is the thing. There's arguments. There's going to be pros and cons to all of this. Mm-hmm. And as we've said before, we make no promises here. We're just delivering you the information. We can't tell you what's right or wrong. If the tools are here for us to try and use, what we always say is just protect yourself as much as you can online. Know what you're getting into. Know the data you're giving up when you agree to use any of these tools and products. And, you know, just have fun with it.
And, you know, just try to limit your impulses on, you know, making disinformation around elections.
If you're a bad actor, don't even listen to this podcast. Get out of here.
So one little postscript on all this OpenAI / Sam Altman news is regarding what keeps Sam Altman awake at night.
Me.
And believe it or not, it's not visions of Tasia Custody and sugar plums bouncing through his head. As much as some of us may wish that were the case.
He keeps me up at night.
So he also recently spoke at the World Government Summit in Dubai via video link and expressed his concerns about the potential harms of AI to society, calling for a universal regulator to oversee the development and deployment of AI, similar to the International Atomic Energy Agency. Now, Sam Altman said he was not worried so much about the whole killer robots scenario that people often automatically go to, Terminator, Judgment Day, et cetera, you know, AI uprising, but rather he's most concerned about the subtle societal misalignments. That's a quote, subtle societal misalignments that could result from AI systems that are not aligned with human values and goals. I guess it depends on what your values and goals are, because we contain multitudes. He gave examples of how AI could affect democracy, privacy, and human dignity. He also said that the current stage of AI development was still open for debate and discussion, but soon there would be a need for an action plan with real buy-in from the global community. So global coordination on anything? Good luck with that. But, you know, we saw it with atomic energy and nuclear weapons and so on. He said that companies like OpenAI should be bound by an organization that could monitor and regulate AI ethics and safety. So we've talked about safety. We've talked about regulation in the past. And Sam Altman is being pretty consistent about this. He's either a good actor or at the very least trying to be seen as a good actor. It's like, hey, guys, you know, We are mindful of these issues as well. It's up to you, governments, to make the regulations, and then we will follow your rules. There's the whole analogy with crypto over the last decade or so, where in the United States, for example, you saw regulation by enforcement as opposed to having actual regulations. That's made it really hard for a lot of organizations, such as Coinbase, that were often operating in a regulatory vacuum. But whenever you hear large, well-heeled incumbents like OpenAI calling for regulation, just remember that that ultimately can work to their advantage because they have the resources to jump through all the hoops and be very careful and follow all the hundreds, if not thousands, of pages that governments would be likely to generate on these very topics, which can act as serve as a bit of a gatekeeping effect for startups who just don't have the resources to follow all those rules. So Be careful what you wish for, but maybe Sam Altman is wishing for that so he doesn't have as much competition. But that's what keeps him up at night.
Darn it.
Not the killer robots.
Not me.
Oh, we'll see.
Well, have we done it, Tristan? Did we do it?
I think so. Thank you for sticking with us, and thank you for tuning in to AI Named This Show. Come and check out our website, if you please, at www.ainamedthisshow.com. Well, you'll find all our past episodes, the lovely artwork connected with those episodes, and links to all our socials and more.
AI and goodbye.
Regulate me, Daddy.
You've been waiting to say that the whole show.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.